episode 595 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode on Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth number one. It's part one of the Drowned Earth storyline, but really in a way it feels like the storyline has already been going on for a little while. We had a prologue or a prelude in Justice League 10. We had a tie-in in Titans 28, I think, and then another tie-in in Aquaman 41. So we have a pretty good idea of what's going on and what's at stake and who the antagonists of the story are. But I guess technically the Drowned Earth storyline really takes off in this one-shot issue, because in this issue we see the Earth has already been drowned, whereas before it was kind of set up. So it's been an enjoyable event so far, even though we're barely getting started, continuing kind of in the tradition of Scott Snyder's Justice League run. It feels very impactful to the overall story of what's going on in the DC universe, and it feels like there are going to be consequences to what happens in the story, rather than it's just an event that happens in Justice League and we don't see any repercussions going forward. From the time Metal started and the Dark Multiverse was introduced to the Justice League No Justice storyline to now what's going on in the three different Justice League titles, it feels all connected. And Scott Snyder was even on Twitter the other day talking about how they're all connected, talking about how in spring of 2019 we'll really start to feel the speed or the pace of this big overline story kind of ratchet up a little bit, because they've got so much in store and it's a lot of fun to be telling these big epic stories. I mean, without question, the biggest story that Scott Snyder's ever told. And, you know, it's not that he's telling it on his own. He's got his collaborators and other creators that he's working with on these titles. And again, it just feels great to have the DC Universe feel so connected. You know, obviously, he's working on the Justice League titles with James Tynan and Joshua Williamson. And then he specifically mentioned the Hawkman title that Robert Venditti and Brian Hitch are doing that's tying into a lot of the story they're trying to tell too. So again, I just think it's cool that everything is so interconnected. And I feel like a lot of the times some of DC's best storylines come out of that interconnectedness. So the Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth Part 1 one-shot is written by James Tynan. We have art from Howard Porter, colors by Hi-Fi, letters by Tom Napolitano. We've got Howard Porter and Hi-Fi on the regular cover, and then Francis Manapul on the regular cover. So as this issue opens up, we see a flashback to the early days of Arthur Curry. We're in Amnesty Bay, and it's talking about how Tom Curry knew the sound of the different waves and could kind of predict the weather. And he knew that lighthouse and the ocean so well. He would talk to his son Arthur and his wife Atlana about hearing those waves and hearing the different sounds they were making. And he would say that the ocean was speaking to him in a language only he could hear. And Atlana would smile at that, right? Because obviously the ocean talked to her in a different way. And so she probably liked to hear this human talk about that. And she felt so fulfilled to find a human, to find a surface dweller who loved the ocean in such a way that she could relate to, right? And so every morning the young family would step out on the dock and Tom would ask Arthur what the waves would bring, and Arthur would go still and he would listen. And obviously Tom had no idea at this time that he actually was hearing the ocean talk to him, right? And one day Arthur began to describe how the mackerel were whispering about a swordfish prowling in the bay, and Tom laughed, thinking that, you know, it's the imagination of his young son. But Alana didn't, because she knew that he was actually hearing those things for real. So as we turn the page, we see Atlana leaving them. There's all kinds of fish and sea life at the surface. And Tom's talking about Atlana tricking the sea creatures, scaring them to the surface, and trying to scare Arthur. And Atlana says, you know, it's not my doing. Arthur will always hear the call of the ocean, and he's got to learn to understand the responsibility that comes with that, or it will destroy him. And Tom's talking about, you know, please don't go. You know, this is his beloved wife. And she's saying, I've got to do this to keep him safe, right? And we see Arthur calling out for his mama as she disappears below the waves. Then the scene shifts to the Blood Reef now, which is the realm of those three sea gods from other worlds, other multiverses. They're kind of their little pocket universe, if you will, where they're using it as a command post to attack the Earth. So Arthur's in chains. He's being dragged along by a couple of guards. And when one of them starts to get a little rough with him, the sea god in charge of him, Admiral Tide, just kills him outright. And Arthur's shocked by that. He's like, what kind of queen kills her own men? And she reminds him, not a queen, a god. And I have taught my people that the tide takes what it must, right? My world and my people were robbed of my wisdom when Poseidon showed up and cast me down into the graveyard of gods. And I was trapped there for thousands of years, and I was helpless as the tides of my world receded into a lifeless desert. And then we see the other two gods show up, Captain Gall and Commander Drogue, and they're talking about how everything is in place. And as revenge on Poseidon, they're going to turn his children into their servants and also rebuild their empire with Poseidon's world. As, you know, their world was taken from them, their worlds. They blame Poseidon for that. And so this is a way for them to have revenge. And Aquaman's kind of recovered from the blow he received, and he starts talking about how they don't need to take the Earth because Poseidon is dead and we can have peace. But Fleet Admiral Tide doesn't want peace. It's too late for that. The drowning has already begun. And then the scene shifts to Gotham City, and we see that those purple floodwaters rising and engulfing people. We see Jim Gordon trying to get as many people into the police precinct as possible. Meanwhile, in the skies above, the bat signal is shining, and Gordon is wondering just where Batman might be. When Batman shows up, he starts explaining what's going on and tells Gordon that he needs to get the people up to the roof. They need to be evacuated because anybody who touches the water is going to be transformed. Perhaps it's magic. And as he's explaining to Jim what's going on and exactly how dangerous things really are, Gordon's like, I'm not looking to evacuate to the mountains. It doesn't seem like he wants to abandon Gotham City. He says, as long as men and women are on the ground getting their feet wet, then I should too. And before he can say more, the woman that he was just escorting into the police precinct, she had touched the water. Right, she was soaking wet, and the transformation occurs, and she turns into the fish monster that everybody who touches the water seems to turn into, and she tackles Jim, and he goes into the water himself. And right in front of Batman's eyes, he changes into a fish monster. So Batman tells everyone in the precinct, barricade the door, get to the roof. As we see the commissioner turn to attack Batman, but when he tries to, he passes right through him because it's actually a hologram. Batman is still in his convalescent chair, I guess you'd say, from the beating he took when trying to get the totality from Lex Luthor when all his bones were broken. And so he actually was casting kind of like a hologram projection communication device to talk to Gordon. So meanwhile, we find out that the power and the communication is actually down. And what actually was being broadcast, what he actually was using to communicate, was kind of a telepathic signal from Miss Martian. And in lieu of getting the emergency broadcast systems up, the only way that Batman's able to communicate with anyone is through a mind link. So for that, he needs Miss Martian. So he asked for an update from Miss Martian, and the science division is still trying to figure out the source of the flooding and how they can stop it. Meanwhile, he contacts Superman, who's in Metropolis. And Metropolis, for the most part, is dry because Superman's managed to set up seawalls designed by Star Labs, and they're holding the water back for the moment. And Superman's just making sure everything is okay and the evacuation is underway before he heads to the South Pacific to help the Great Ten. But there are thousands outside the seawalls, you know, close to Metropolis that he wasn't able to save. And Superman does feel guilty for that. He inquires of Batman how Gotham is doing. And in somewhat of a defeatist tone, Batman tells him, well, Gotham's halfway underwater, airlifting people while we can. But by his calculations, there are already millions of people on the coast already transformed. They need to figure out a solution faster. Which then leads us to the Flash, who's attempting to rescue as many people as he can by running on the water. We see Barda and Mr. Miracle transporting people through a boom tube. We see the Superman, the new Superman of China, doing what he can to try to rescue busloads of people. The Ray, Adam Strange, all these heroes trying to get people to higher ground, while the Flash laments the fact that they could use the help of Martian Manhunter, Green Lantern, and Hawkgirl, but they're on their mission to Thanagar Prime. And also nobody's heard from Wonder Woman or Aquaman, and Flash is worried that that they might be in trouble. But he also says, I don't want to step out of line here, but has anybody called Atlantis? And as we turn the page to Atlantis, we know things there are already pretty dire. Because in that Aquaman 41 tie-in, we saw the floodwaters reach Atlantis as well, because Atlantis has actually been raised, the city of Atlantis has been raised from the depths of the ocean currently. And Mira was not able to hold back the floodwaters. And all of Atlantis, most of the Atlanteans have been transformed as well. But we see her here rescue Ocean Master, who's in, he's prisoner in a tower high above the level of the water. And she says, you know, we may have had our disagreements in the past, but today Atlantis needs you and I need you. And it's not just our people, but all of our life on Earth that's at stake. So Ocean Master says, you know, you might have always thought me a monster, but everything I've done has always been for the good of Atlantis. So of course I'm with you today. I'll help you. But I've actually been waiting for this day since I was a child, because this is basically Atlantis's great secrets rising up from the depths to come back and bite them. And he knows the terrible power necessary to save Atlantis, and he's ready to wield it, but he doesn't know that Mira necessarily is. Meanwhile, back at the Blood Reef, the sea gods are showing Aquaman scenes of the devastation and the flooding that is occurring on the Earth, and they're talking about how they're trying to teach Aquaman a lesson. The sacred duty to being a sea god is more than he's willing to take from what his actions have seen so far, right? All the beings in the sea, they don't nurture their foolish dreams. They teach that life is a struggle, and in order to endure it, you must survive, and you've got to be able to bear the burden of that responsibility. And Aquaman's like, you're talking about terrorizing innocent people as if it were a holy rite. What purpose does that serve? And their response to that is, well, Poseidon must not have taught your people to respect and fear the power of the sea. And that's why your race pollutes the sea and doesn't respect its majesty. And this is why it's like they're blaming Aquaman. This is why we're going to take over your oceans, because your world needs a sterner hand so that people will understand what the power of the ocean is. And Fleet Admiral Tide tells Aquaman, you know, I'm right. You know what I'm saying is true. And you can tell that Aquaman is not really buying it for his part. But she says, you know what? It doesn't matter, because even now in our home dimension, you can hear it screaming. You can reach out and touch your ocean with your mind, even though you're here with us and you know what's going on. And then she says, I could hear my ocean from my prison screaming too. I was helpless to stop it, and the depth death of my world. My subjects all cried out for their goddess, but I couldn't answer. And, you know, we will have our revenge, and you are going to feel the agony that we felt. And Aquaman says, you're underestimating our world, right? You tried to come and take this world once before, and you failed. So you should run back to your own ocean the second you got free. And she's like, you haven't been listening. My world's gone. The worlds of all of us, all three of these sea gods, all their worlds are gone. So we've struck a deal to take yours, and they've struck that deal with Black Manta. And Aquaman is just floored by this. He's like, how, you know, as terrible as you've ever been, Black Manta, I can't believe you would ever make a deal to sacrifice the Earth. Meanwhile, in Metropolis, we see that the walls that Star Labs had built, the sea break to keep the flood from flooding the main part of Metropolis, those walls, those barriers have failed. And Superman is extremely disappointed that he couldn't stop it. And he also is getting very angry. So he tells Batman, the sea walls just broke. Metropolis is drowning. What news do you have? And Batman tells him how they have discovered what they believe to be the cause of the flood, the source of the flooding. It's all coming from a single location, the Mid-Atlantic. It's a singular being that's pouring millions of gallons into their ocean. And all Superman wants to know is where it is. Tell me where this thing is now. So as soon as he finds out where it is, he goes and attacks. He says, I don't know what you are, why you're here, but I need you to understand something. This world is under my protection. Flash shows up soon after, and they're both trying to take out this Kraken. But before they can, as they're wondering what it is, Commander Drogue shows up, explains that it's a Kraken from his native homeworld of Ancus, and he spent years raising it and training it, and that it's going to allow them to take over their world. And Commander Drogue appears to be extremely powerful. He seems to be on level with Superman himself as he reaches out to grab the Man of Steel. Meanwhile, back at the Blood Reef, Aquaman and Black Manta are fighting. Aquaman's continuing to express his disbelief that Black Manta would sink low enough to turn over their planet to invaders. And Black Manta's like, you know, you're blind to the great purpose. You had the ability to shut this door a long time ago because you knew about this. You knew the truth of Atlantis and the world, and you didn't do anything about it. And Aquaman's like, what are you talking about? Enough of this madness. Fight me. And Black Manta says, I didn't come here to fight you, actually. I just came here to watch them break you. And again, Aquaman's not sure what he's talking about, but he's pretty much had enough. He says, no more riddles. And at that point, the fleet admiral agrees with him and says, you know what? I think it's time for the Atlantean to learn. And she gives Aquaman a view of Mira, who's still back at Atlantis fighting for her life. And Arthur's very concerned about Mira. And Fleet Admiral says, reach out to your love, reach out before she dies. And in Atlantis, as Ocean Master and Mira are fighting, Mira sees a vision of Arthur. And she's wondering how it's possible, where he is. And Arthur tells her, they call it the Blood Reef, you have to run. And then he disappears before he can say more. So Mira's trying to explain to Ocean Master what she just saw. She says, I saw Arthur in my mind. It wasn't telepathy. It was something deeper. And Ocean Master says, well, that must mean that the invaders already know the truth about his abilities. So we're really running out of time. And then asks Mira what she knows about the legend of Arion. And Mira says, what all Atlantean children are taught, Arion was a great Atlantean explorer, and he was part of the city's golden age before the city sank, and he traveled to every corner of the world spreading the dream of Atlantis. But it's really just a tall tale. And Ocean Master takes her to a part of Atlantis that she didn't even know existed, a hidden part called the Hall of Crowns, and it's where the remains of Atlantis's greatest kings and heroes all reside. And then he asks her what more she knows of Arion. And she goes on to say that he was favored by Poseidon, and he learned a great secret of life on Earth and many other worlds, and he wished to create a great community across all the universal oceans, and that he called out to them, but what answered was only monsters. And Arion died in the battle to stop those monsters from coming to claim our oceans as their own. But again, it's just a fairy tale. It's a legend that Atlanteans tell their children so they'll behave, right? Like the boogeyman. And Ocean Master says, yeah, but the thing is, it's not a legend, it's history. And what the legend leaves out is the means by which Arion and Poseidon struck down the otherworldly gods, a weapon that Poseidon was able to use, and it's called the Tear of Extinction. And obviously we've heard of the Tear of Extinction before in the pages of Justice League, and we know that the Legion of Doom got their hands on it, but what they have here in the Hall of Crowns is the conch centerpiece of Arion's crown supposedly will lead the way to the Tear of Extinction. So regardless of whether it's in its resting place where Black Manta and Cheetah got it from, presumably, or even if it's in the hands of the Legion of Doom, they should be able to track it down. So Mira takes this as good news and says, well, if what you're saying is true, this could save the entire world. And Ocean Master, true to form, says, well, I don't care about the surface world. I only care about Atlantis. I only want this for this city and its people. And you're the queen, and you got to remember your priorities. So you've got to overcome Arion's folly. You've got to save Atlantis. So as that he says that, the walls of the Hall of Crowns are broken. As Captain Gall, the third of the Sea God Triumvirate, has tracked them down, and starts attacking along with his troops. And Mira is trying to hold back all the water, all the hardened dark water that Captain Gall is channeling. It's the hardened water from his world, Okari, a world the size of Jupiter, with the deepest waters known to the universe. He's channeling those waters, and he's basically trying to use them to crush Mira and Ocean Master, as Mira is trying to use her aqua kinetic power to hold it back. So Ocean Master knows what he has to do. He removes himself from Mira's protective bubble, saying that he'll create a diversion and allow her to escape, which he does. But in the meanwhile, we see now that he's exposed to the water himself, he starts to transform. So Mira is able to escape, but to where and for what reason, what she'll actually be able to do is yet to be determined. Meanwhile, out in the Atlantic Ocean, Superman is continuing his fight with Commander Drogue, who is basically shrouding Superman's cells in dark water so that Superman's unable to feed on sunlight. Luckily, the Flash is able to intervene and grab Superman from Drogue's clutches, and he goes running away, calling out to Batman, saying, I saved Superman from Drogue, but he's not looking great, and how the heck are we going to beat these guys? And meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, Batman's like, I'm not sure. We'll find a way. We have to. And he sends Miss Martian out to rejoin the Titans to help them, while he takes it upon himself to stay behind in the Hall of Justice to protect the totality. So meanwhile, at the Blood Reef, Aquaman is watching the destruction of Atlantis and says, call your man off Mira, call him off. And now that Atlantis has fallen, the gods feel like the earth is theirs. And Aquaman falls to his knees. He looks defeated and asks once again why they're doing this. And Fleet Admiral Tide says, well, we needed to draw out the true power of the life energy that was imbued in you by the ocean itself. So we had to absolutely push you to your limits so that we could draw this power forward, because this power was key to locking us away in the graveyard all those eons ago. So we need to take it from you. the tide takes what it must, because they don't want Aquaman to realize that he has this power. He has the power within him to defeat them, because he didn't even realize it. So once the Fleet Admiral takes the power, she gives it to Black Manta, which is his payment for having betrayed the Earth in the first place. So for his part, Black Manta has the power, and he says, wait, this is how you felt all along? This is what it felt like to be Aquaman? Like, how could you have all this power and be so pathetic, basically? You know, somebody like Black Manta, when they are given power like that, they're going to wield it. They're going to show it off. They're going to use it to further themselves, to better themselves. They're going to use it in selfish ways, right? And so he's like, you had this much power and you used it to speak to fish? Like, again, Manta does, like, if you had all this power, you know, in Manta's hands, he's going to use it to rule over the world. So meanwhile, Commander Drogue asks Black Manta if their Legion of Doom will be satisfied. Manta agrees that they will. And we see Fleet Admiral Tide saying, all right, then let the old world fall and we'll build a new paradise in its ashes. Nothing can stop us now. Meanwhile, just outside of the Blood Wreath, we see a boat that has some of the followers of the three old gods. I guess they're sentries or guard posts or whatever. And they're talking about how when it's done, they'll at last have a home again. And then they see another boat coming out of the fog and they wonder who goes there when they're attacked. And we see them wrapped up in a golden lasso and a voice from off panel saying, now tell me. And we turn the page and there's Wonder Woman in her battle armor looking resplendent. Where the hell is Aquaman? So we haven't seen Wonder Woman in a while. You know, she was one of the Justice Leaguers along with Aquaman and Firestorm that was out looking for something from Poseidon. You know, they knew he had been killed. They were wondering if he had reincarnated. They had a ship in a bottle that was left behind as a message from Poseidon that was supposed to lead them to find answers. And it was those three Justice Leaguers that upon finding that ship that they were led to, Aquaman was transported to the Blood Reef. We didn't see what happened to Firestorm and we weren't sure what happened to Wonder Woman up until this point. So it looks like she's managed to track down the gods and she's at least close. She's very close to where Aquaman is. So I guess in part two, we may see her establish a rescue mission, but based on Aquaman losing his power and that power being given to Black Manta, I don't know that they will be able to stop these three gods, because whatever power that was, whether it was power manifested and held within Aquaman himself as the ruler of Atlantis, or if it was somehow tied into his own kind of more native superhuman abilities, we don't know, but he doesn't have those powers anymore, the power that he needs to reject these gods. And even if they do, how do they remove the floodwaters from Earth? How do they transform everybody back? How do they defeat these three gods who are so immensely powerful? But if anybody can do it, it's the Justice League. And obviously Wonder Woman herself has some pretty heavy ties to the pantheon of gods. So she may be just the one to help guide Aquaman into finding Poseidon again, wherever he may be, and hopefully using the power of Poseidon along with whatever power that Mira can recover with the Tear of Extinction to finally turn the tide, no pun intended, on these gods. So again, it's a very monumental story. It feels big. It feels consequential. It feels fun and dangerous and menacing. Exactly what you want from a big kind of universe-spanning event. Like really all the Justice League arcs have been doing so far. We went from The Witching Hour, which had a lot of those same feelings as far as lasting impact and importance to the magical corner of the DCU. And immediately on the heels of that, we're getting another kind of mini event, Justice League driven event that feels like it's doing a lot of the things that Witching Hour did for the magical corner of the DC universe. It feels like Drowned Earth is doing for the more straightforward hero corner of the DCU. So really enjoying it. The art in this issue by Howard Porter is, it's typical Howard Porter excellence. A lot of real kinetic, free-flowing looking action, some great choices for layouts within panels, great close-ups, great transitions from panel to panel. And yeah, I mean, I can't overstate enough how incredible Howard Porter's art is and how well it suits this kind of aquatic themed event, because his art is so free-flowing, you know, so you get kind of that aquatic feel. But the other part of it is it's so dynamic. So you get a feel of, you know, the flow of water, but water that's like churning, you know, like a lot of action going on. And it's not, you know, it's not calm water. It's not soothing water. It's raging water that, again, suits the style and the mood and the story that's being told here. So there's a lot of great character moments here. I really feel like James Tynion as a writer is just continues to evolve, continues to improve. And I think a lot of it has to do with the confidence he's gaining as he's playing in these universes and playing with these characters more and more. But he's also seen how well received a lot of his books and stories are. And it's giving him the confidence to take chances and not always big chances either, right? Like you take big chances on theme and ideas and sometimes big concepts that you want to put in your book. But then you take other smaller chances with like scripting and dialogue, right? Like one-liners, you trust yourself more that you're getting the voice of the characters right, that you are able to drop in little funny one-liners or little anecdotes here or there. All that comes with experience and with, you know, writing and getting your books out there and having them well received. It then gives you the confidence that I can do this. I am good at this. I can trust myself a little more to add in those little extra quirks, whether it be little character moments or little funny one-liners or little even visual gags that you're giving to your artist to depict on the page. All that kind of stuff comes with experience and confidence. And I think that James, over the last 2 years, since about halfway through his Detective Comics run, when it started being critically praised, I think that's when he really realized, man, I'm really doing this, right? And then same thing with when the Witching Hour, Justice League Dark, probably Justice League Dark first and then going into Witching Hour, because, you know, the first couple issues were pretty good and then issue 3 hit and it was leaps and bounds, right? He had built it up those first 3 issues so well to that culmination of action and compelling story that was happening in issue 3 with the big reveal of the bad, the Upside Down Man and all that stuff. And it was so pitch perfect and it was handled so well. And I think the reaction to that and what fans were saying really gave James a big boost, and we're seeing it in the probably a lot of the writing and stories he was working on as all that was happening, and this probably being among them. So again, it's a fun event. Aquaman, Wonder Woman, it's kind of who we're spotlighting in this Drowned Earth story, as Scott Snyder told us last time he was on the show. And they're not my favorite Justice Leaguers. You know, Aquaman maybe a little more so than Wonder Woman, but I do appreciate that they're getting a chance to shine. And it just goes to show the strength of this creative team, that even though these are two of my lesser favorite Justice Leaguers, that you can tell a story that's very Aquaman-centric and I can still find it really compelling, and can't wait to see not only what happens, but like, how are they going to get out of this? Right. And I can't wait to end this chapter and move on to the next to see what we're building towards. So, if you're reading Justice League Drowned Earth and have some thoughts, again, I always appreciate people reaching out to let me know what you think. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.